Now, it's the best of Ricky Gervais' Deadly Serious. Embarrassing stories.
I was sober for 18 years.
Were you? Yeah,
first 18 years.
I didn't know. All right.
Then I've been drunk every day since. There's not been a day when I haven't had a drink.
You didn't stop drinking until you were 18.
I know,
I'm quite surprised.
No, my dad liked to drink, and I thought, no, I won't drink. And the first fucking drink I had, fucking hell, I know why he was drunk all the time. It's fucking brilliant. Makes you feel fucking brilliant. Why would I ever give this up? Yeah. And I have pissed the bed. And so fucking what is my fucking bed?
There
once, right, I got... Jane was over visit.
I think we should go out on that.
Once, right, Jane was in Brighton. Right, and I'd had a few. Right, I just went to the pub with my mate Nick. Right, and it was Guinness. Right, and I had about 6 pints of Guinness. Right, and I woke up and I had fucking out. And it first time I'd pissed the bed. I'd never happened before. Right, so I got a heater and we were in a bed set and I tried to dry the bed. Right, and I broke the heater. Mm. So I thought, oh, I got to confess. I went to Jay and said, right, I pissed the bed and I broke the heater.
Beyond your relationship.
Survived that.
Frank Skinner tells a story. This is a Frank Skinner joke, but he's a long time ago he used to have this in his set, but it's a true story about how he went on a one-night stand and he'd got drunk, you know, and got into bed with this woman. In the morning, he wakes up, she's still asleep, and he's pissed the bed really badly. He thinks, what the fuck, I don't know what to do. So he wakes her up and he says, listen, I've got to tell you something. You've pissed the bed.
Right, first time I stayed with Jane at her parents. It was early days, like we've been going out for about a year, right? And we went back to her parents' house, and then her parents were out or away, so we were in their, you know, in their bed. We were staying in their place, right? And we went to a party, and I got pissed. And apparently at the party, I was lying on the dance floor trying to trip people over, right? So that was good. So we went back, right? Went to bed. I got up in the middle of the night, not knowing where I was, walked around the bed thinking I was in the toilet and started pissing, right?
That was quite a lot, I think.
Yeah, and I started pissing, right? Jane goes, Ricky! And I went, oh, bloody waking me up.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Have you pissed a lot of beds then?
No. I think that is the two times.
No.
That is the two times.
I'm not going to comment on that.
And I have never.
That's keeping his mystique, you see.
Shat myself. I know people would have shat themselves.
Under any circumstances. Under
any circumstances. Oh, if you don't count being a baby, right?
No, I've shat myself.
You've shat yourself.
I have.
We were talking about the universe with Professor Brian Cox last week.
Well, as you know, I am of the belief that anything that's happened to you, you can talk about and own it, and then it's not embarrassing anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
But some people don't agree.
I agree.
But that's how I live my life. So, yeah, I've shat myself a fair amount. I'll tell you why that is. Not to do with drink. It's to do with food. I tend to eat loads, and if I know that something is not quite right, but I'm hungry, I'll just carry on eating it. And I've done that loads
of
times.
That's what everyone does. We eat and eat and eat, and then we go to the toilet.
No, but one particular occasion, I was when my daughter was really young, and we were going, I remember, to the Bethnal Green Museum of Toys, and I didn't really want to go there. I was like, oh, I can't be fucked with that. But basically, Morwenna, my partner...
said, I've shat myself.
I didn't say I'd shat myself. I didn't do that.
Daddy shat himself again to avoid coming to the toy museum. I'm sorry. No. I've shat myself again. We can't go.
No, that isn't what happened, right? We'd gone to some restaurant near our house, and they'd served me a steak that I'd said, I like steak quite rare. So I said, hey, it's not rare enough. Can I have another one? So they went, all right then. It came back. In the middle, it was frozen, right? But I was too embarrassed to send it back again. So I just ate it, including the frozen ice lolly of steak. So then we get in the car. Now, remember, we've had a bit of a row, me and Morwenna. And she's saying, right, we're going to the museum. And I should have said, well, I don't feel very well. Can we go home? But I felt like, no, all right, we're going to the museum. And I'm not going to, you know, go home and go to the toilet. We're just going to go. So we start going. And I say, I don't feel very well. And then I think, I'll chance a fart. Right? And unfortunately, that turned out to be a shart, as I believe it's called. And I can still remember saying, oh, I think I've shat myself. And Dolly saying, Daddy, when I need to do a poo, I hold my hand under my bum. I say, it's too late for that now, Dolly. It's too late for that. So I ended up in the Bethnal Green Toy Museum toilet, right, taking my pants off and trying to get them down the toilet because I thought, what am I going to do with these shitty pants?
What was that? And what was the consistency of the shite?
Well, it was quite liquid. Well, yeah, it was really quite
liquid. But that couldn't have
liquid,
been the steak you just ate.
Eh?
That couldn't have been the steak you just ate.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was something. I felt it was, certainly. I remember saying to Morwenna when it all, you know, all happened and we were not arguing anymore.
How did you say it, though?
I said straight away when it happened. I shat myself. But then I said, I came out of the toilet.
What did she say?
She said, why? What have you done that?
And why?
I said, oh,
why?
I thought you were an
what
adult.
Okay, we don't have to go to the fucking toy museum. Yeah. Just say next time.
Yeah. So I went to the toilet. So I remember telling her afterwards, oh, you know, I had to go and take my pants off in the toilet. And then, to make it all right, I said that a friend of ours had come to the Bethnal Green Museum and had apparently changed lots of pants because he'd brought his children there, changed lots of pants in the toilets at that museum. I'm sure it's happened lots of times. And she said, yeah, but no adult has gone in and changed their own pants. What are you talking about? The fact that your mate has brought his baby in and changed the nappy doesn't make it all right for you to change your
he's
pants.
He's trying to get on the nappy changing legs.
Yeah, well, I was quite tempted to use that, actually, while it was on. Anyway, so I don't know where those pants are.
What was the one
I didn't have a spare pair of pants.
What was the one when you took Dolly to the toilet when she was little in public?
Yes, when I took Dolly to the toilet, I used to do a show about fame, and that show is basically about all the really embarrassing shit that no one really talks about, like except I do, about what can happen to you when you're, you know, a bit more visible than other people and stuff. And so one thing that happened was my daughter, obviously when she was young, she just called me Daddy or Dad, but every so often she'd get confused. I don't know if your kids ever did this, and she'd call me David.
Right.
Like just because she heard other people doing it. So I was once on Hampstead Heath taking her for a walk, and I went into the toilets, just a public toilets near Kenwood House on Hampstead Heath, and it was very packed, I remember. And you have to take her into the men's toilet because she's only three and she can't go into the women's toilet by herself. And I weave through all these men and I get her into the cubicle. I pull her pants down. That's the moment she chooses to go, David Baddiel. I remember thinking, all those men out there, they're going to be thinking, that's he's not her father. She wouldn't have called him as her father, that's just some bloke.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was a bad moment.
That's great. That's lovely. Yeah. I thought another story. I think I've told this before, but me and Jane moved into our own flat together, it was tiny.
I know this story.
Yeah, it was fucking tiny, right? It was just a bed in a room, right? And in bed, I could open the fridge from the bed. It was a single bed. It was the fridge, the cooker, and the sink, right? Mm. And it was a shared toilet. So it was just a little room in the shared toilet. So in the night, I didn't put trousers on and go outside or whatever. I just go to the sink, right, and have a piss, right? I had to stand on tiptoes as well, right? I had a piss, right? And I remember Jane once, right, just opening her eyes blearily, going, oh, at least take the dishes out first.
That is awful.
I used to hold them up and under the dish, so straight down there.
I can imagine that.
And now
I can imagine
I've got loads of toilets all around the world.
Yeah. But still, do you still occasionally piss in the sink?
No, I don't. No,
I do
no.
still occasionally.
No,
piss
you
in
don't.
Sink. Yeah, I do. Not the sink, not the kitchen sink. The what? Sink in the bathroom.
Why?
What?
I can't be bothered to you know, do...
What, to turn round?
It's a bit further along.
Right, that's proper mental. You don't really still piss in the sink.
Every so often, I do occasionally.
Your sink in your toilet, you piss in the sink, as opposed to the toilet that's in the toilet.
Is a toilet in the big fucking house in Trumpton, where the fucking butler's walking for 3 days to get to?
Basically, no, it's not that... I shouldn't have admitted this. No, but basically... In my study, I have a toilet. And so I go in there, and sometimes I think, oh, I've got to lift the seat up. I've got to walk another 2 feet. The sink's just here. It's nearer to the door. And also, I can put my genitals on the edge of the sink, and it's quite nice to rest them there.
Like you're bathing a little bald hedgehog. But hold on, wait a minute.
I do bathe it afterwards.
But hold on, though. The trouble of lifting up the toilet, what about taking your penis out of your trousers? Why not just piss your pants?
I wish I could do that.
See, I've got the most beautiful black fluffy cat, which I rescued my cat.
What's... Go on.
That is my story, and I'm sticking
to
it.
Go on, what's the true story?
Okay, so when I went into this popular reality television show, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, they sit you down and they get all these press people to say, what skeletons have you got in your cupboard? Are you going to get some ex coming out and saying something about you? And I said, I don't think any of my exes care.
Do they do that? Yeah. What, in case there's a scandal when you go in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so they pre-prepare statements for you.
Really?
Yeah. So they were, you know, they were asking me stuff and there was nothing that I could think
Why?
Of.
Why? Because it's such a new level of fame to a different audience.
Yeah, because they think people are going to comb through your past, comb through your she was once a member of a Nazi party.
Right.
If that's the case, then it's best you speak up now, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought none of my exes would care enough to talk about it. But I said the one person in my neighbourhood who I've had a bit of beef with because she's accused me of stealing her cat. And we have had to have I've had to have robust words with her because I found a kitten that looked too young to be out on its own.
Right.
So I did what I thought was the responsible thing. I took it and I took it to the vet. I had it checked over. It wasn't collared. It wasn't microchipped. And the vet said it's a beautiful little girl cat, beautiful cat. Leave it with us and we'll rehome it. And I said, well, no, leave it with me. And if they come forward, then I'll give it back.
All
and
right.
I put notices up on my neighbourhood site and someone said, oh, I've lost my cat. It was a black cat. And I was all right, okay. Yeah, our little boy, Max. I said, oh, well, this is a little girl. And she goes, oh, right, well, Max was a boy. I was like, okay, fine. And then a couple more weeks went along and my cat didn't come home one night, so I put a notice up on the neighbourhood site, this time putting a picture of the cat. Right. It's a pretty fluffy black cat.
Yeah.
This woman said, that looks like my cat. And I said, but
same you're... woman.
The same woman.
Yeah.
I said, but your cat's a boy. Yeah, 6-month-old boy, yeah. But they could have misgendered my cat. And I said, not at 6 months. Not at 6 months. That's pretty clear. And my cat's a girl. And I said, why didn't you have it microchipped? And she goes, because we booked to have it castrated. I said, right, once again, you've made it clear to me that you know your cat's a boy. I know this cat is a girl. The vet has told me it's a girl 3 times, right? So I waited and then a respectful month, over a month, and I had the cat microchipped in my name and I told the I'm a Celebrity people this might come out. It didn't. So when I came back from I'm a Celebrity, so by this time we've had the cat for nearly 4 months, 4 months. I book her in to have her neutered, spayed, and the vet calls me mid-operation and says, look, we knocked your cat out. I'm really, really sorry, Shappy, but we've made a mistake. It's a boy cat, not a girl cat. I threatened this woman with law or lawyers.
God.
I threatened her. I said, if you contact me again, I'm gonna have to take this further because it's very distressing. And so I've had this cat for 4 months. It's horrific.
And it is her cat, isn't it, obviously?
I don't know. I keep looking at the picture. Obviously, my cat is older now. And she sent me a picture of a cat when it was younger. It's not as fluffy as my cat. Seems to me to have different coloured eyes.
You're wearing a beret. You're trying to convince yourself this is not... It's. But, oh, my God.
Because, right, and also the woman lives...
So what did you do? She doesn't know this. You haven't... Well, she does now.
I hope she hasn't moved to America.
She's probably listening to this.
Oh my
this
God.
Goes on iTunes as well.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I'm happy to... I didn't know what was for the best because she lives a few...
No, it's not your fault. You thought you were in the right.
Yeah, and she lives a few streets away from me, right? So I'm not, it's not a house cat. They're out. The cats are out. And to an extent, cats choose where they live, right? So the
cats... They do. They're the only animals that domesticated themselves.
Right.
They wandered in and said, feed me.
Yeah.
And they invented... Oh. They don't meow naturally to each other. They invented that because they communicate
they
with
realize
humans.
They realise we're Sonic. Oh.
Yes, yes.
So I thought I could contact her and say, I am so, so sorry. But I've blocked her on Facebook now, so I'd have to dig her out again. I'm so sorry, but this mistake happened, and get a letter from the vet to confirm it, because they would do that. And then, but I can't give the cat back.
Why? Because you love it? Because it's yours?
Yeah, I'm blaming my children, but I love the cat. My kids love the cat. It's Eartha Kitt. We love
it. Well, I think it is your mistake, but I think you should keep it now because it's not the cat's fault and now it's got a home.
Do I get in touch with the lady?
I think you might, but then she might demand it back and that's not good for
but
the
she
cat.
She can't prove
so
that
So you're
it's
living a lie for the good of a cat, but that woman, I don't know what you could do. I don't know what you could do. This is a real dilemma because actually it's only the cat that suffers now if she has to be rehomed.
But I at least owe her an apology. But
you
then
do.
I would run the risk of her saying well...
But then she's... But I think if you gave her an apology and said, I'm so sorry, and said, but the cat's really happy now, I think that it would be for her to say, well, okay, it's the cat's more important, keep the cat. but you owe me a cat, and you could.
Yeah.
You
see, that's what I thought, because I thought if I got in touch with her and said, I will, you know, either, you know, buy you another cat or give you money to donate to her.
And cry on her doorstep, cry.
Yeah. And give her money to donate to a cat charity and rehome a cat.
Does she know who you are? Does she know you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, on Facebook, everyone does, because we have a neighbourhood site that's really popular.
No, like, I mean, does she know you as a famous comedian?
That's what I mean, I don't know. Oh, okay. I don't know, but it has been mentioned on the site that, oh, why don't we get, you know, local celebrity, Chappie Call Sandy, to help us with our
save the
allotment.
Because that could work either way as well. She can think, oh, that was good of her. She didn't have to do that. She's got a reputation. Or she might go, she can afford a £10,000 cat.
Oh, I can't. But yeah, I don't know.
Oh, that is
really
a real
tricky
moral dilemma. There is, I mean, the answer is, it would be nice for her to get an apology. She was absolutely wronged, but the cat is happy now, and the cat shouldn't go through it twice, so it should stay with you. I don't know what you, there's probably some sort of, what would Solomon do in the Bible?
Solomon would not have threatened her with lawyers if she'd got in touch again.
Adverts especially are humiliating.
Oof. What
you to like? So I had to sing a reggae song. Oh, fuck. Frozen chicken.
Please, Jesus Christ.
Please, can you do it?
Right, what do you mean?
The only one I knew was, there's a rat in my kitchen, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. By...
And I didn't know any of the other lines.
Is that UB40?
No, it's what's he called?
Beanie Man? No.
No, it's you reggae chap.
Yeah, UB40, isn't it?
Not UB40. It's,
didn't they do it?
What's he called? Oh, my God.
What?
You
who?
Know, what's he called?
Sing a bit.
There's a rat in my kitchen. What am I going to do? I'm going to kill that rat.
I'm sure UB40 did that.
Probably did. They covered it. But it's...
Desmond Dekker.
Oh.
Peter Tosh. Bob Marley.
Bob Marley. It's Bob Marley.
Is it?
Is
yeah.
It?
And so you had to... So they said to you, you came in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and
I came in. There's a chicken.
Right.
And some headphones. I had to put the headphones on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dance about a bit.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
And sing a reggae song.
I thought. Oh, so you got to choose the song?
Yeah.
So did you sort of do an impression?
The only one I knew.
Did you put on a Jamaican accent or did you just sing it in the Northern accent?
I sang it in Northern.
Brilliant! I'd like to hear that version. There's a rat in kitchen, what am I going to do? There's a rat in kitchen, what am I going to do? I'm going to kill that rat.
Oh, it was awful.
Oh.
It was awful.
How many people were in the room when you did this?
About four.
That's pretty embarrassing. Oh. Singing.
What did they do while you did it?
Just watched.
Like dead
silence.
Yeah.
I think dancing might be up there with sex scenes for some people.
Yeah.
Having to dance seriously,
definitely,
like you're good, is too much, isn't it?
I accidentally went to a dance audition.
Fuck me.
What do you mean you accidentally?
Well, I went again. This was in my early days. I've learned a lot since the wanking year. But around that time, there was another audition, and it was a quite big name director, and it was like a thing, and they were doing like a fringe play, and they needed actors. It said need an actor for this thing, and I thought, oh, good. And I turned up, and at the door they said to me, how is your movement? And I said, well, I got here. And I looked, and everyone was like in leggings, and I was just in jeans and a T-shirt.
Oh, no.
And they said, okay, so before we do the acting bit, we'll do the dancing bit. And I was like, ah?
Oh, that's...
Oh, no.
What do you mean, the dancing bit? And then suddenly I was like just in a hall with professional dancers and me.
Oh, no.
And I was, like, so embarrassed, but I also was, like, trapped. I was like, well, I'm going to... And there was a woman teaching us a routine, but I was quite far at the back, so I was just...
You thought, maybe I can wing this.
And I did. And they offered me...
No!
I got through to the next... And I was like, oh, no.
You got through.
Oh, dear. I was like, this has gone too far. Just let me go. Let me go.
Oh. Well, but I did the Muppets movie, and
yeah,
I had to dance, right, which was awkward, and that was terrible. I had a choreographer, and they showed me, and I think they had to keep adapting it, like, okay, you can't do that, do this, right?
Yeah.
And 50% of it was awkward, because I could have done it, right?
Yeah.
But there's still that part of you go, I want to get out of this alive, so I want to do it somewhat ironically, right?
Yeah.
And then it comes out, and I think, what was they're looking at the fucking frog.
It's a great sequence.
Of course. That, like, no one's going, oh, he can't. There's a fucking frog on your head. I see now, who gives a fuck if you can dance or not?
How long did you spend?
It was a whole day. I think it was a whole day.
Just one day?
Yeah, because also it was like one long sequence running through the set and, you know. And of course, even if I got my bit right, there's someone with a frog on, you know, coat hangers. Going, let's do that again. If I got it right and the frog got it wrong, I was fucking furious.
What it is about dancing that makes it so humiliating?
Can you like dance at a wedding?
No. I hate
it. I used to dance. Like when I was, you know, I think you'd lose your nerve as well. Like it doesn't look right. It just doesn't look right. Me dancing, isn't it wrong? And except comedy. But that's the beauty. All these things that are embarrassing in real life are great for comedy.
I think because you overthink it.
Yeah.
You do overthink it.
And you're meant to be sort of enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's something visceral. There is
like,
something about it.
It's emotional.
Yeah.
You're meant to be lost in the music.
Yeah.
Do you dance at home in the mirror?
No, never. I never dance.
Never move.
I never feel like dancing.
No.
I never hear music and think, I want to get up and dance now. I'm happy just sitting down and listening. Yeah. I don't feel the need to get up and move around.
I have to move.
Does that mean I'm
What if there's
dead?
A big beat?
Yeah.
You don't feel that
there's
even
a
your
big
head.
Beat.
Yeah, what if there's a fucking wicked beat going down?
What if there's a big old beat?
What if there's someone like dropping a beat? What do you have to do then?
But your head doesn't go to a beat?
No.
Nothing.
My foot might go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My foot might go.
Up in the air. It goes straight up in the air. She hops around with her foot in the air.
I might tap my hand.
Okay.
I can't wait for you to tell this true story.
It's frustrating. It's frustratingly true, actually. It's one of those ones where nobody really believes the stories that I tell on stage. And this was the first Edinburgh show through line that was completely true. And it was everyone was like, that's not true. And I was like, no, this doesn't happen for real. First of all, let me tell you how it was my favourite start to a show, I think, because it was an incredibly hot room. And I used to wear a leather jacket, and I would say, oh, I understand this is a very hot room, I'm wearing a leather jacket, so you guys will look at me and think twice about how hot you think you are.
Yeah.
And then halfway through the show, I would take that leather jacket off and have another leather jacket on underneath.
Jesus.
That's great. Like we were just saying, like they wouldn't quite laugh at it enough to justify wearing a leather jacket for 45 minutes.
No,
just
the incredible discomfort.
Yeah.
That's great.
It was so fun. And so anyway, I met this girl messaged me online on Twitter. Her name was Stacey Ramsey. And she had 100,000 followers, so I immediately trusted her. And we chatted back and forth, and then she was like, "Oh, do you want to have Skype sex?"
Right. At which point you say,
"It's like yeah,
no,
yes,
no, no, of course. What are you mental? No, of course not. Why would I do that?"
That's what. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
How soon into it was that off?
This is a funny question, right? Because there was a Channel 4 documentary released about 3 months ago on this girl, and she'd sort of got in touch with loads of different people and
sorry, was it a real
them.
Girl? But it wasn't a real, that wasn't her, was it? Was it a real girl?
I don't know. I don't know who it was. I don't know what form she took. But she, there was this guy who was like a presenter, like back in the 90s or something, back when people used to do heroin. And he came to one of my gigs making this documentary, one of my tour shows, and he was like, "Hey, sorry, I just really want to chat to you about this catfish." And I was like, "Oh yeah, it's fine." And and he was like, "Oh, so I think we were catfished by the same person." And he was like, I talked to her for probably about 18 months before I finally trusted her enough to have Skype sex with her.
Right.
Joel, how long were you talking to her before you had Skype sex? And I was like, I had to look him in the face and be like, 20 minutes, mate. 20 minutes before I whapped it out.
So hold on. So you think, so hold on. Why? So this girl, presumably with a photo of her that wasn't a photo that of a girl who you found attractive.
Yes.
Talking to you on Twitter.
Yeah.
Right. And, but, okay.
So, so 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So what kind of...
Honestly, 20 minutes as well.
So, right. Okay.
So okay. She was just a very attractive lady. She yeah. was also, some of her tweets were funny. And so you, right. I was like, oh, she's got like a sense of humour. Right. She's very pretty. Profile picture. Yeah. It's like, this is great. And then we did Skype sex. We did it.
So hold on. So, okay. Okay. This is, okay. Right. So you go, okay, you be put on your laptop.
Yeah.
Right. And you go, and she says, Skype me at this address.
Yeah.
And you tweet your hinge and she accepts it, right?
Yeah.
And so she's looking at you, right?
Yeah, this is the problem part, is that, see, I thought I was having Skype sex with somebody.
Right.
Right.
do you have nothing on that day?
Literally.
Yeah. Well, I had a beanie on, actually, regrettably. I had a beanie on when I was doing the whole thing.
And so,
I was completely naked with a beanie on.
Right. Okay, so you... this is tough for me. I'm not of this time and place and world, so this is odd. Everything's odd about it. Everything's odd about it for me. But the weirdest thing is that you'd fall for it.
Yeah.
Even if it was real, that you would go, yeah, all right, 20 minutes on Skype, on the internet, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll masturbate on the internet. your face, you must know. I mean, you're through it and you came out there and you didn't do anything.
I literally came out the other side.
Right. So you're naked with a beanie hat on, masturbating to for the pleasure of this woman, maybe, you met on Twitter, right? Because she had 100,000 followers.
Yeah, I think I was doing it over the follower count more.
Jesus only had 12. So this woman is definitely
How
legit.
Often do you think Jesus got his dick out?
God, he'd love it.
Okay, right. What are you looking at on the Skype thing?
So then that's the issue, is that... It wasn't even... I thought I was having a Skype sex with someone, but it wasn't. It was actually... it was actually just like a porn video. It was like a video.
Right.
And so basically someone was just watching me watching porn.
Right.
So it wasn't actually a conversation back and forth.
But did you say when you said, how you doing? And she didn't answer correctly, or did she? Right.
What she would do? It's very clever, and this is why I'm not really very angry about it, because I just give her full credit. I think she's absolutely smashed this, right? Every time in the video,
you keep saying she. I think it's some sort of Russian man,
definitely.
You know what I mean?
It's the kind of thing that Sean McLaughlin would do. To be fair,
I need leverage on other
people. So you are in your flat with Skype on, looking at a recording.
Yes.
Of a woman.
And every time the person in the video looks like they're typing, come to the screen and look like they're typing, then the person would type something. So it looks like I'm involved in a Skype situation. When I'm not, it's just a person.
But do you think it's someone... Do you think it's even someone actively, a human, working you over? Or do you think it's an algorithm and a...
Yeah, I think it was actually a human being.
So there was someone there playing the video and looking at your things and then trying to...
Me watching porn. It's like a sort of porno goggle box. And it was... did it.
I'm just thinking of...
About me ejaculating.
No. Are your parents alive and all your family?
My parents are fully alive. My mum used to have a Google alert on my name. She took that off.
Oh God, this is too much for me. I don't know what to do. It's that I thought this would be fun, but I don't know why you're. I mean, I'm glad that you're not embarrassed. I'm glad that you're not embarrassed, because I don't think I could cope with your embarrassment. It's enough me thinking of all the things. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, you have to own it though, don't you?
You've owned it. You've taken total ownership of it. Okay, so we're okay.
My mum used to do all this sweet little text, just going like, "Oh Joel, I've just seen you nominated for that award. Oh, that's so lovely. Oh, just saw your thing in The Guardian. Absolutely wonderful." That all stopped.
She got a Google alert that you were online.
Jesus,
God. This is too much for me. Right. Okay. So
happened.
So you're naked with a beanie hat, Hold on. I don't know what to. I don't know how to say the words. So the internet, whoever's watching, can see everything at the moment.
Was it framed like
me?
Did you think that the porn you were watching was them?
was it at least smart enough that it could have been someone else?
Yeah, it was.
So you just think you're thinking a one-on-one with this girl you just met.
I thought it was a private situation.
Yeah, I thought
it was great.
Yeah,
and
let's get this right. You've been conned. You've done nothing wrong.
I couldn't believe
except
my luck.
Be a bit fucking stupid and eager and naive.
So naive.
But of course, but in our society, of course, you meet someone and 20 minutes later, your dick's out.
Well, it's just I'm a naive kid from a farm, you know, and I assumed everyone's like nice. And I was just like,
but it's the internet that's the scary bit.
Yeah.
It's the internet that's the scary bit.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that I assume it's forever. I assume this is recorded somewhere.
I assume so, yeah.
Right. Okay. So what happened? Tell me.
So then.
Right.
Message her afterwards. She doesn't reply. I message her again and she doesn't really reply. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a bit weird. I don't really think much of it. And
I know that's the weird bit. That's the weird bit. Not wanking in my flat, right, with a beanie hat on, but the fact that, usually come back, Twitter messages usually come back a little bit faster than that. This is weird. This is a weird day. This is an odd day. Yeah, go on, right, okay, yeah. Right.
Well, something's odd about this.
Put my pants on and message her again.
Put my
later.
Pants on.
Yeah.
Watch Making a Murderer.
Yeah, right.
And then she didn't reply, and I was like, okay. And then a couple of years later, to fast forward in the time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so nothing really happens. Fine with it.
Yeah.
I get a message saying that I'm now followed by, I think it's an account called Celeb Busted UK. And it said in the bio, it said, if we follow you, we have naked pictures of you. And I was like, what? Why is anyone? And I was like, shit, it's Stacey.
Oh, this is really actually sinister, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really fucking horrible, actually.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, no.
And you did know, you assumed straight away.
Yeah,
it's not like you've done this so often to go, well, it could have been any one of a fleet of wanks.
Yeah. A fleet of, I think that's the word for
collective noun.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the nice thing is that I don't really have a dodgy past.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing. That's a horrible way to put it, but the nicer side of all of this movement of people coming forward with all this bad stuff is that I know that I haven't done any bad stuff. So I'm like, I feel like this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 2 years later, they message me and they say, we've got photos of you. And I was like, that's a bit weird. And then, because I knew I was at that point going into the jungle, so I.
And you thought, wait a minute! I'm already a celebrity. I don't need to go into the jungle.
That's possibly the decision I should have taken. And I went. I knew then. I was like, if I go into the jungle, then it's all going to come out, and then it's going to be it's going to become sensationalist and ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I thought, okay, let's embrace it. Let's just go. And I decided to try my best to talk about it whilst I was in there.
Did they try and blackmail you at all? Is there some of this no comeuppance? Oh, well, there is.
So they said, give us some money. Give us
really?
£2,000 and we won't release the this is what made me really laugh. They said, give us £2,000. We won't release the photo, as if they'd gone to Boots and got it developed.
Yeah.
The photo.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm not, you know, I may have been stupid enough to do this in the first place, but I fucking, I'm aware that I'm a bit of snappy snap. And so I said no. And then, I went into the jungle and then they released the video.
So you know when you're in the jungle, this is probably happening.
Yeah, this is happening now. Yeah.
So what happened? Was it? It was on the papers, was it?
Yeah, it was in the papers.
I don't think I remember it because I don't read the tabloids and I don't care.
Yeah.
I only know about it because you've talked about it before.
Yeah.
So I wasn't aware of this.
No.
And I probably wouldn't have believed it or wouldn't care. So what did they say? They just said.
They
got you wanking on the internet.
We got him, and then I was like, oh, okay. And then after, you know, it's something that I could have easily been like, oh no, go god, and really panicked, like the guy who made that documentary. But I, you know, it's fine. I've got nothing to hide. It's just be, you know, wanking's normal, isn't it?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the fun, isn't it? It's this, yeah. It's like everyone masturbates, and I don't quite see the pleasure in trying to catch someone masturbating. Yeah. It's like, yeah. What are you
like,
doing?
Ha ha! Yeah, got ya. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. When you look at it like that, I mean, the embarrassment is being embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I'm but again, that the first thing I thought of is what's in it for her. I was fucking out, or if it's a her or whatever, it's criminal if they're black around you, so fuck them, yeah. Right? So that's one thing. But it would be fuck me, my mum. My mum saw me.
Yeah.
I know.
The best way to deal with the awkwardness, the mother, all that situation, I thought would write an Edinburgh show about it.
Yeah.
Because then you can get them all to come and watch it. And that's how I told everyone, is that I just wrote an Edinburgh show about it, and then my mum came up to me afterwards. I was like, was that true? And I was like, yeah. That's how I told her.
So she hadn't even heard from the tabloids and stuff.
No. So she hadn't heard, and then she saw you do a show.
Yeah.
And afterwards went, I had no idea. And did a part of you think, Why the fuck have I done this show?
I should have told her.
I got away with it.
I did the Edinburgh show before I went to the jungle. That was the key point.
That's great. Because you own it. I've always said that about embarrassment. If someone comes out of the toilet and they've got a piss stain, and someone goes, oh, you've pissed yourself, and you go red, that's it.
Yeah.
But if you come out and go, look, I've pissed myself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
That's the job of comedians.
That is the exactly. And I've always thought, fuck it, well, yeah, all right. Yeah, fucking hell, I pissed myself.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do this show.
So that did that show. It all happens, and then I sort of think, oh, I need to sort of solve this. I need an ending to this. Literally, I need a happy ending, and so I sort of try and contact the police, and they don't really do anything, and. And then I get in touch with like a hacker friend who's like,
how would you have paid the £2,000 if you'd have said yes? How would you have done it?
Don't know, Bitcoin. Sean McLaughlin's houses. I don't know. How do you think?
I don't know. I don't know how. I've always wondered, how do you?
I wonder
you
if that's
in a brown paper bag. Or
that's it. If they'd have given bank details, you could have traced them then. If you gone,
I wonder whether it's a business expense. Whether you can you could probably take it out of your business, or whether you have
court.
To.
It's absolutely a tax write-off.
Do you reckon it's a tax write-off?
Court wanking.
Imagine that
payment.
If the tax man comes up to you, go, well, "What about this £2,000? You're not paying tax on that. That was to keep my cock out of the paper."
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
You know,
and so you've done the Edinburgh show. Your parents know. It's all cool. You go in the jungle. Clear conscience.
Then I think I need an edit to this. So I get in touch. Now this is when it starts to get ridiculous. I can't, the hacker person can't trace them. So I was like, oh, it's done, it's fine. And then I thought, oh, I should alert the person whose face.
Hold on, they're not a hacker, are they? Because you voluntarily.
I try and get in touch, because I've got this friend who works for like an IT company, and he was like, oh, I might be able to trace the Skype call.
Oh, right,
back.
Right.
And so I tried that, and that didn't go anywhere. And so, I thought, I should alert the person whose profile picture they're using, and tell them that they're using it.
So when did the penny drop that this wasn't the person you were talking to?
It was immediately as soon as they added me on that account as the celeb buster.
Right. Okay. So, right. I see. Like, right. Oh, right. Okay. Right.
And so I did a Google image search of the profile picture.
Right.
And immediately it came up with a real profile of a real person.
Right.
And so I messaged her, and I was like, just to let you know, someone's using your profile to sort of to catfish people. And I said, are you aware of it? And she sent me a message back saying, yeah, I've been aware of it. It's been happening for like the last 3 years.
How awful.
And I've been trying to shut down their account, but they keep coming back. And I was like, oh, it's horrible. Do you want to meet up? And
do you want to have Skype sex in 20 minutes?
And I was like, well, because genuinely, like, and it sounds seedy, but I was like, do you want to meet up just so we can have a photo together, and then we can send it to the catfish person and be like, look, I found you.
Right.
And I thought that would be a really fun ending to it all.
Yeah.
And so I sort of talked back and forth with her for a while, and we chatted about stuff, and then we did. And this is the, I think she lived about half a mile away from me. So the person who was the real person, the real face of the person who I thought I was masturbating to, lived half a mile away from me. And so we met up in Greenwich and we went for a meal, and that was nice. And then I ended up dating her for a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like we just ended up like hanging out. And this is the mad
thing.
It's
like a Disney movie.
It's like a Disney. It's like a modern Disney movie.
It's like Jim Carrey. It just starts with Jim Carrey's face. The camera goes down to his enormous penis, right? He's whacking away, right? Yeah.
Jim Carrey stars in Wanker Wanker.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yes, man.
Wow. Wow.
It's, and I just ended up, we got really well. And this is the wonderful sort of full circle of it, is that she then moved back to Wales, where she sort of lived, and then we ended up having Skype sex.
Right. Okay. I want to say too much information. After all I've gone through, and he has to do that.
It's too much.
You're right. It is like a Disney film.
It's so beautiful.
It's just like a Disney film. Now I've had the time of my life. One of the things with like being a working comic, which I sort of, I did sidestep a little bit. I didn't go through the rock and roll aspect of, you know, getting lifts and driving and all that from gig to gig. Now, you did that. You're not doing it anymore. You're out of the woods a little bit with that, are you?
Yeah, I've got a tour manager who drives now, but also because I just don't drive anymore at all.
I don't drive. I've never driven. Why don't you drive anymore?
I've written off 3 cars in my life and all of which were my fault, the crashes, and it's just like, now it's enough. You know,
you had 3 crashes?
3 cars, yeah. My first one was it was 8 days after I passed my driving test, and I was in my parents' Ford Fiesta, and I was on the back roads going back to Geddington, where they lived in this little village, and I just went too fast around the corner, just stacked, just spinning, and then like bumping off of curbs, like there's like grass verges, balancing on two wheels, on the right-hand side of the car, for what felt like ages.
Now, did you fear for your life or feel a bit cool for that 2 seconds?
Oh, I'm very scared.
Yeah, not like, thinking, this is like Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, I was like, look at me. Yeah, but when it was on 2 wheels like that, I was like, oh, this is going to, like, this isn't moving fast enough to roll. I'm not going to roll, it's just going to slam into the ground, and my head's touching the ceiling. So if this goes onto its roof, I'm probably gonna die.
That's
so
scary.
I was just like that, and then it went onto 4 wheels. I was like, I remember saying out loud, I was on my own. I went, oh shit, I've crashed the car out loud like that, because I was just like completely having to acknowledge it with myself that something had happened.
That's funny. You know, you said it out loud.
Yeah, out loud on my own. Shit, I've crashed the car.
And what was that, a nervous thing, or just think like you were, was that a relief that you hadn't died?
Yeah, maybe it was that, but also maybe just because up until that point in my life, I don't think anything that scary had happened to me. It's the scariest thing that had ever happened.
You've always
to
wanted
me.
To be in a documentary where someone narrated.
Yeah,
what was
yeah.
Happening.
So I had to be like, this is almost telling myself, this is what has just happened to you.
Wow.
And now you've got to deal with this.
And so that was a terrible scrape, but you didn't die.
Didn't die. Yeah, you know, got out of that okay, and then like.
Was the car dinged up?
It was written off. Oh, yeah, God. It was just really smashed up. I tried to drive away because I didn't want to accept the fact it was fucked. So
in America, we'd say totaled. It was totaled. Like,
it was
nothing.
Totaled, mate.
Oh, man.
And 2 seconds down the road, it died again because I managed to pull off, but back into the road. So I was on the verge, where it's actually a lot safer. But instead, I got it back into the road, died, lights weren't turning on, the car's coming really fast towards me. I see in the distance, and then I look in the rearview mirror, and another one's coming really fast behind me, and they both see me at the very last second, swerve around me, hit each other, and go into a ditch.
No, yeah. No.
So it's like, and I'm just getting out the car, and at that point, I don't know what's happened to them. They were both completely fine, but like at the time, I'm getting out, going, oh, that could have, like, they've hit each other head on. Something's happened there. That was scary, and that was actually the one out of the 3. That's the one that messed me up the most, even though it was the least dramatic.
That was the least dramatic.
That's the least dramatic.
Right, let's go on to number 2.
Number 2 was the very last gig I did with my band. We did it in a gig in North Yorkshire. We had to drive back to Kettering. I fell asleep on the dual carriageway.
You're driving?
I'm driving.
Yes.
I'm falling asleep.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be a problem, would it?
Why would you?
I just want to get the facts straight, but this wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
I was meant to fell asleep.
Yeah. I woke up. It was fine. Then I started driving.
But I wake up because my bandmate yells my name, wakes me up. I steer towards the central reservation because I just wake up and just immediately jerk to the right. So then get to the left again, and it goes towards the lorry. So I'm to the right again, and then the car just started doing its own thing.
Right.
Smash into the central reservation, span off, hit the lorry, and was pinballed in between the two of them and spinning with all the windows exploding down the.
This is horrendous. That is proper. But you again.
I've got a huge grin on my face just because
you are just not hurt at all in this.
No, me, my friend Graham, and our friend Jake come along. We all just get out. We're all completely fine. The lorry driver's fine. You know, I remember the guy, the recovery service people turned up, and the guy was looking at the wreck the front and the back of the car were gone. The windows were all gone, and one of the doors, the only door that none of us were sitting next to, was completely caved in and just smashed in. And he's looking at it with a torch, and he goes, "You know that lorry you hit?" I was like, yeah, obviously I know it. Intimately, actually, I am. He went, it were full of milk.
This is like a joke.
Yeah. And he's just standing there like, okay. And then he added, he went, so if that had fallen on you, you'd have been dead.
Oh, you know,
as if any other lorry would have bounced right off. It would have been off. Lucky that was only full of hammers. I mean, fine.
Wow.
All right, and three?
Wow.
Yeah, the third one was my first tour support. I was supporting Josie Long on tour. It was me and Josie and the other support, a guy called Johnny, who's a musician, in the car. We were following the promoter to the gig on this winding Welsh hillsides. We got stuck behind a log lorry for ages. There's a lorry carrying about 100 logs.
I bet you're wishing it was milk.
Logs. Yeah.
Oh, is everyone okay? We're a bit wet. We are a little bit wet. We're soaked. Right. If that had been logs, you'd have been crushed, mate. Yeah. Right? So, okay. Right, so it's a big log lorry.
So, it's really slow.
You already thinking, at this point, I've got to be careful because I've totaled two cars?
Absolutely. Oh, well, I'm even, at this point, talking to the people in the car about my past car crashes. We were having a conversation about it.
That's amazing.
And just talking about them and going, yeah, this happened once and this happened. You know, you've got to be careful and all this. And then the promoter who was in front of us behind the lorry, he overtakes the lorry and it's fine. And then we look and we go, it's not safe, so we don't do it. But now we don't know our way to the venue. We can't get a signal in the hills. We don't know how to find our way to the venue. So eventually, it's a really long, empty stretch of road, and we all unanimously agree we can do it, we can overtake it, and we don't make it in time. So by the time we get to the corner, I still haven't cleared the cab of the lorry, and four cars come round the corner just head on with us. And then I steered in between the cars and the lorry, so I'm just driving in between them with no space either side, and then come out and I've made it. We come out of the corner and I haven't hit anything, and I'm coming in front of the lorry and it's fine. And then the very last car, I just clip the very last car with the back right-hand corner of mine, and that sends us spinning. So the lorry slams into the side of the passenger side of our car and pushes us down the road and pushes us off the road, up a grass verge, through a garden, through a greenhouse. So we go through a greenhouse.
This is like...
This is ridiculous.
This is like an 80s
movie. I'm seeing it happen.
This is crazy. Yeah. This is like Lethal Weapon. Yeah. This is... Yeah. Right, so, okay, right. Yep. That's like a director going, we need a greenhouse.
We need a greenhouse.
Why? Well, I'm fed up with boxes.
Yeah.
We don't do the box anymore. We do greenhouses now. What about a lady with a pushchair? Too dangerous. Just a greenhouse was fine. Fill it with cactuses.
Cactuses in there. A collection of Ming vases next to it. So you can smash through those.
Yeah, brilliant. So
were you screaming?
No, because weirdly...
You don't scream, do you?
You just go...
You just try and concentrate and get yourself out of it.
Sort it out. So we come down out of the garden, down this back down the verge again. And as we're coming down the verge, the lorry moves and just shifts and just drives over our car. So it just drives over the front of our car. And then as it's coming over our car, it flips over. And all the logs just pour off of the lorry just directly onto our car. We're being dragged through a swirling sea of logs with logs embedding themselves in the windshield. I had a log stop so close to my face just through this windshield. And then we exploded through this hedge into a field and finally stopped. And got out the car. I'm running over a sea of logs, just these waves of logs. I'm running over these waves of logs into the field and looking at the scene, which is this lorry on its side with these people pulling the windshield off to get the driver down from his chair, you know, and he was fine. He got out and he shouted it over to us because the last lorry driver, the milk lorry driver, had come up to me and been really nice. I'm like, oh, so worried about you. Are you okay? And this guy got out. He went, yeah, are you guys all right down there? He's the other side of the logs. He's like, who's the driver? I went, me. And he went, you're a fucking twat, mate. And I was like, can't believe I fell for the old who's the driver trick. Like, oldest trick in the book, and I fell for it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But,
and a neat little PS to that story. Obviously, I got the train home after that. So I'm getting the train home from having this crash, and my train nearly derailed because it hit a falling log.
That's nothing to do with this.
Nothing to do with this. As far as I know, it wasn't one of the logs still out to get me. One of the things as well about the initial crash was that no one got hurt. None of those cars got hurt. But there was one guy who I saw, he was in the final car, and I saw him come out of his car and he just helped out, and then he was walking along like a Zimmer frame. And I was like, oh God. And then one of the policeman went, don't worry, he was like that already.
I love that.
Yeah. My parents, bad parenting. Even for the fucking 70s.
Really?
It was fucking bad parenting. Right. Yeah. Well, look, to use that example, I think I didn't talk about it last time.
My dad was no parenting. My mum did her best.
Let me do a bit that I don't do. I have lived it in the show occasionally. But just to explain to Robin, my show's partly about the fact that my mum had a very, very public, she was very keen to tell people about this affair she was having with a golfing memorabilia salesman. And the main thing is
I don't know why that's funny.
No, that is funny. That is obviously hilarious. She transformed our fucking house over to golf. It became a shrine to golf. And part of the problem with like dealing with my mum's affair is that you couldn't really get away from it because you turn around, there's a fucking statue of Lee Trevino, right? It's a bit of a problem.
So you knew and your dad knew?
No, my dad, I don't think, did know. My dad managed not to know. Not because he was in denial in a kind of like cuckolded, oh, I can't face it way. My dad was such a bloke, so uninterested in the life and the emotions, he just never somehow noticed.
So it was 50s dad, really, wasn't he?
He might have noticed, but I think at some level he didn't notice. But the key element...
Did your mum want him to know, or did she flirt around?
I think
she
wanted everyone to know, and part of that might have been wanting him to know.
Right.
But anyway, let's just focus on this one particular moment. It's in my show. I talk about how, despite the fact that this affair was going on, their marriage was not dead, because I used to have to put up with I had a bedroom next to their room, and my dad was always making a lot of very extreme sex noises. As my saying in the show is that I didn't know what it was when I was young, and I assumed there was a wounded walrus in my parents' bedroom. I mean, literally, and as you know, I've watched a lot of pornography. I mean, a lot. I've never heard another man make that sound, except possibly Chewbacca might make that sound. And actually, I'll tell this story, because I don't tell this in the show anymore. I'll stop telling this in the show. This is a true story. You might have heard it. Completely true story, right? A mate of mine, he's actually a musician called David Gavin. He's in the band The Sundays. He's my oldest mate. He was staying the night once when he was 14 at my house, and I put him in my bedroom, and I went and slept in one of my brother's room, right? And I said to him, before I went to bed in the other room, I said to him, word to the wise, during the night my parents might have sex, and you should know my dad makes these really weird
noises.
Word
to the wise!
Right? And he said, in a very kind of teenage way, he said, well, yeah, I know what sex sounds like. Don't worry about it. Right? So I go and sleep in the other room. 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a little knock on my door. He comes in, he's white with fear. This is absolutely true. And he says, Dave, I think your mum's died, right? And I said, what? He said, but your dad is making noises like my uncle made at my auntie's funeral, right? So I get up, I go and stand in my room with him. We wait about 5 seconds, and then we hear, I'm going to try, right? I said, they're having sex, and went back to bed, right? And that was that was what the noises were like almost every fucking night. Unbelievable noise. And that is, that's not a very good impression.
How
they were much
you?
Weirder. From when I was about 8 to when I was about 15.
Fuck me!
But this isn't even the story I wanted to get onto. The story I want to get onto, which I do tell in the show, so I'm hoping not too many people hear this who come to the show, because it is a big moment, but anyway, is even though I was damaged and disturbed by that, and... I think he's told you, haven't I? Hasn't he? The name of the bloke. I don't know if you can remember the name. This bloke, the bloke that she was having an affair with, was called David White. That was his name. Yeah. And that slightly fucks up this story now, but never mind. He's not as damaged as when I once heard my mum having sex without my dad, which on her own, she was masturbating my mother, and she made a lot of strange noises while she was doing that. But perhaps the most disturbing...
Even that my mother was masturbating makes me feel really uncomfortable, because I think of it and I think, I don't know if I could have coped as a 14-year-old thinking of my...
But the point is... that it was always quite disturbing hearing her do that, but particularly on this one occasion where the most disturbing noise was the noise she made at the end of this particular activity, which was the sound of her screaming three times the word David. And so that was quite disturbing, although I did know not to brush next door and go, yes, what? How can I help? So obviously I'm doing a bit now, but my point is, this is the bit I wanted to get to about parenting. It's taken a long time, which is in the very unlikely scenario that I was having an affair, right, with a woman called Dolly. Dolly is the name of my daughter, right? And the really unlikely that was happening, right? And then the quite unlikely thing that whilst masturbating right, at night, right, on my own, I did a thing that no one does except in films, which is just to shout out the name of their lover at the point of orgasm. I mean, who does that? That doesn't
you
actually
shout
happen,
hand
right?
Or cock.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, all right, let's imagine I'm thinking about my lover Dolly, right? Yeah. And I'm masturbating, right? And I'm coming.
Yeah.
I still think that as a new modern parent, I would think, you know what, I won't shout out the name of my lover because my daughter, who's got the same name, is next door. And that will be confusing and disturbing for her. So yeah. That's the kind of level of parenting.
I know.
See,
now
about.
I understand, because the one thing that I can, because you've talked about it many times in interviews since, I suppose, the mid-90s, is, you know, pornography. And,
yes.
And I realise that all of that watching pornography is nothing sexual. It's you trying to see as many different faces that are not the face of your mum and dad.
Possibly.
But if you just keep watching other people, because otherwise you go, just, oh, God, I can hear my dad again. I better watch some more of these other people ejaculating.
I think I'm also trying to find some people having sex at a lower level of extreme animal noise making so that I could think that my parents were not abnormal. Because it was such an extreme noise and so disturbing that if I find it in porn that he's like, okay, this is worse. And in the whole of internet pornography, I still think there is nothing worse. Not, I don't mean I'm sure I can see things, but noise audibly, I don't think there's anything worse.
The worst thing that I'm thinking of the kind of sex noise thing, which is I was staying in a hotel and I wasn't sleeping well at that time anyway. And then next door, just I thought I'll go to sleep now. I'd had a long period of insomnia. I was like, I think I'm so tired, I'm going to be able to sleep tonight. And then suddenly they that's it, touch it. And you know the bit where you go, you're describing everything.
Yeah.
Don't just make a noise. That's it. Put the finger in that.
Because I'm not thinking of what's happening next door. I'm thinking of Robin's face.
Yeah.
That's where the movie is for me. Little Robin in his pajamas, furious. The one night I get to sleep and I can hear, put the finger in there, you bitch.
It is a good point,
just
though.
Just lying there, and I'm just like rumping, and then it's like.
Were you naked?
No.
What were you wearing? What were you wearing, Robin?
A full tweed suit.
What were you wearing?
I was wearing my tweed pajamas.
Robin,
Robin's sake.
What were you wearing while you were listening to two people have
right,
sex?
I was. Now this is the thing. You see, wow. It turned out it wasn't two.
What?
So
what?
anyway.
It was one.
So just as no. So I put it in there. Attach it. Oh yeah. Right. Suddenly, I went. That's three voices. Right.
Oh.
So this went on for an hour of audio description, as if they were going, I'll tell you what, I feel sorry for the bloke next door because he won't know what's going on if he just. So we better tell him everything that's going on. And then,
it's like
there's an air of me, her rumping in my pyjama trousers and wearing just a T-shirt with a fictional band from the horror film Deep Red. There we go. That's what I was wearing. Right. So I'm just.
And you want to touch yourself?
No, I didn't. I just.
Have you ever touched yourself?
It was definitely.
Have you ever touched yourself? Shut
up, Ricky. So
what then happened, the reason I definitely knew it was when one of them went, okay then, thanks, bye, left that room, and then the rest of the night was these two people arguing because obviously it had been his idea and the other person wasn't happy at all.
Right.
And so it was an hour of putting the finger in there and then, well, why did you do that? Well, I don't know. And then, it was horrible.
God, it sounds amazing.
Did
you think, because you've done, last time we did this podcast together, you demonstrated a skill, which I knew you had, but I was quite impressed with it, which is you did like three or four different accents. So did you think, I know what I'll do. I'll do seven different voices having sex.
Now
make them feel small next door with their stupid threesome.
Yeah, what am I going to do? I think I'll have Christopher Lee having sex with Morrissey. Here we go. That's it. It's like a dark
wood. Put it there.
Not there. No, thank you. That's not the steak I was expecting.
He told us just before in the interval, while the song was on, that you had a Rick Astley story.
Ricky was saying, tell us some stories. But I was doing the Manchester reopening, the Manchester Arena at the weekend. And Rick Astley was on.
Yeah.
And
for American audiences,
he's quite well known. He's from Rick Rolling, States, I think.
Oh, is he big in the States?
I think Never Gonna Give You Up.
I think that song was big all over.
Oh,
the world,
yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah.
So as I'm coming back in, I've been back to the hotel after the soundcheck, coming back in, and Rick Astley's on stage doing Never Gonna Give You Up. And I pass his dressing room, and it's got one of those paper signs that says Rick Astley. And someone's written in felt pen, "Is shit" on it. So I've gone, to my security guard, "Who'd do that at a fucking benefit gig? That's fucking out of order." And then I was thinking, they'll probably think it's one of us lot because my band would have not naughty, you know what I mean? And he can't think that we'd be in any way respectful. And I was going to my, so I'm going to the dressing room and saying to the band, "Have you written that on Rick Astley's thing?" And they're like stoned, going, "Who's Rick Astley? What are you talking about?" And I was going, "Someone's written his shit on thing." My security guard says, "Shall I go and take it down just in case there's a thing?" And I went, "Go on, go and take it down." So as he's taking the sign down, Rick Astley comes off stage and says to my security guard, "What are you doing there, mate?" And he said, "I just have to remove this sign." And he said, "What for?" And he went, "I've just got to get you another one." And Rick Astley said, "But why? That was fine when I went on stage. What was up with it?" And he went, "I've just got to move it, mate. Just give me a second." And he says, "No, why have you got to move the sign?" He said, "I'll be honest with you, mate. Someone's written something on it." And Rick Astley says, "Let me have a look." And he said, "Just let me go and let me have a look." So he opens it and it's got Rick Astley's shit. And Rick Astley went, "I wrote that on that before."
Really? Did he?
Yeah, Rick Astley did it.
That's great.
Oh, well done, Rick Astley.
Because he went right up in my estimations. Yeah, that's brilliant. And he said, "No, I do it all the time. If I'm doing festivals, I'll put outside my dressing room, I'll scribble in felt pen. Rick Astley is a cop."
That's brilliant.
That's great.
This has been the best of Ricky Gervais' Is Deadly Serious. Get every episode of Ricky Gervais' Is Deadly Serious. In North America, subscribe to SiriusXM. Internationally on iTunes and Amazon under audiobooks. And youtube.com/RickyGervais.